Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
Hey there, it's Brad. As someone who's passionate about podcasting, I've always thought there should be more support for physicians who want to share their stories and expertise. That's why we're launching Doctor Podcast Network.
We're bringing together a community of physician podcasters with one goal in mind: to provide the tools, connections, and resources you need to grow your show. So whether you've been podcasting for a while or maybe you're just starting, we've designed this network to support you every step of the way, and we're going to help each other rise, not compete.
If this sounds like something you benefit from, we'd love for you to join us as we get closer to launch. So you can sign up at drpodcastnetwork.co for early access. Stay tuned for more details in the coming weeks. Really looking forward to what we can create together. Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
This is Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Welcome to another edition of Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. I'm super excited to have my next guest on. I know a number of you have been talking about finances. It even came up recently on one of my coaching sessions that I have with one of my clients, and was talking about a financial coach. Should they get a financial advisor? Should they fire their financial advisor? Should they hire a financial advisor? I'm really excited because we have a financial advisor on the call today. He is the chief operating officer of My Financial Coach. He's been featured in the American Association of Physician Leadership's medical journal on how to hire a financial advisor. He's worked with many high net worth financial professionals, and he lives the CFP's ideal of comprehensive financial planning as a collaborative process. He currently has his Master's of Science in Financial Services. And just speaking to him just beforehand, seems like a really great guy. I know he's into video games. I read that on his LinkedIn. So we may nerd out and talk about video games, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Into the program, Mr. Enpo, too. Enpo, how are you doing today?
Do you prefer Mike or Dr. Mike?
Dr. Mike is fine. Mike, whatever.
All right.
Whatever you want here. You got the bow tie on, so I know you're cool.
What's interesting, I tie these myself at the start of every day. I got to say, when I first started, it took a very long time. But I think now I can probably do one, just depending on the shape and size, about 30 seconds or under.
That's awesome. I'm just going to have to do a clip on, my friend. That's all I know how to do. So let's talk about financial advising. How did you get into this space? Tell me about your background. What led you to this, where you're at today, becoming the COO, my financial coach?
Yeah. So what's pretty interesting is I had the opportunity to work at Bank of America, and a very interesting role allowed me to explore a lot of different things. And really early on in my career, I realized I didn't want to sell money. So mortgage and merchant banking was out. And then when I was thinking about, well, do I really want to run a branch? It seems very fine, money counting oriented. Didn't seem right. I was fortunate enough that our branch had a advisor that was there, and they could really come up with really interesting ideas and solutions for their clients. And I thought, wow, that's a really great industry to get into. Of course, as I progressed in my career, I was fortunate enough to work at AXA Advisors. Now they're back to Equitable. Before they were Equitable, now they're back to Equitable after being AXA. But we're to AXA, got my Series 7, 66, life and health, all that stuff. And really quickly, I think, and I'm sure that it's maybe this way with medicine as well, when you're on the outside looking in, you see all the cool stuff. And then when you're on the inside, you probably know, okay, there's some very obvious things that I feel conflicted on. And I would have great conversations with people, but at the end of the day, if a financial person ever starts talking to you about financial stuff, you know it's going somewhere. Just like how I'm sure when the pharmacy reps roll into the office, they're probably talking about something. So I found that even though I was having great conversations, and I would maybe point out one or two interesting things, whether it's by training or by just how the incentive structures work out. And in case your listenership doesn't know it, but a lot of advisors are either paid to manage your money for a percentage fee or paid to offer you financial products, and the advice is incidental to how they get paid. Not knocking it, it's just how it works. What ends up happening is similar to the RVU model of medicine, where you know, you gotta earn your keep. And so for us in the industry, I thought you could probably solve that with education. So I went and I tried to get my CFP. And then I was like, hey, there's a bunch of other letters that you can get behind your name. So maybe if I get more letters behind my name, I'll get smarter. So I got a bunch more letters afterwards. If anyone wants to Google me and find my LinkedIn, I have all that alphabet soup that culminates into my Master's of Science in Financial Services. And I had that actually as a byproduct of a wish I made. Have you ever watched that movie with the monkey's paw, Dr. Mike?
It looks too scary for me, but I know where you're going with this. What is it?
All right. I was like, okay, I want to work at a company where I don't have to have conversations for any reason at all. And I want to really double down on my education. So at the time, there was a company that was hiring called LearnVest. And they were out in Arizona. And it truly was a, hey, you don't have to do any sort of financial sales, prospecting, whatever you call it. All you have to do is help people figure out their budget and their finances. And you'd be surprised at how many financial advisors, if you really sat down with them and said, hey, can you help me with a budget? They couldn't do that. They don't teach you that in financial advisor school. They teach you how to sell mutual funds, ETFs, life insurance, or whatever, but they won't tell you how to help people with a budget. So I was like, okay, that's something new. You don't learn how to do that. You don't learn how to talk to people about their student loans. You're not taught how to realistically explain how a mortgage works, unless you sell mortgages, you work at a bank or whatever. But for me, I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity. I can get my master's paid for. I'm all in. All right. Monkey paw goes down where I'm like, I just wish that I could learn. And so I'm now being asked to move to Arizona, where I don't have any friends or family. I don't know anyone there. And I had the opportunity to really learn and make a really good push into financial services. Now, I will say that on paper, it sounds great having someone who has no ability to offer you financial products and services and doesn't know anything about them in a way. Granted, I did because I had a background in it. But then we also became very ineffective. So we would help people who needed a budget. We were learning how to be trauma unit specialists. So we would go ahead and we would staunch the financial bleeding. But then when it came time, when people were good, they were well off, they actually started making progress, there was no way for us to help them. Or we would give them advice like, hey, you're a single individual, you have a bunch of money, you should probably try to grow it somehow. And they're like, oh, well, how should I grow it? There's Betterment, there's Vanguard, you could just choose one. And they're like, okay, why don't you, like, how? And really quickly, I learned that there were some limitations to that model. And at that time, they were being absorbed up into the Northwestern Mutual mothership that had purchased them. So I thought, okay, I think I'm ready to move on. And I made my second wish, which was, okay, I want to really be involved in the next startup I'm part of, where I am able to really steer the direction and address some of these big issues that I just know are prevalent in the financial services industry. And I want to be able to help really change that conversation. The monkey paw finger goes down. It's like, yeah, okay, wish granted, but you have to make it now. So go ahead.
Oh, now you did it.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't do it alone. So I think that's important to know, right? My CEO, great guy. He reached out to me. We were a good fit. He really liked the model at LearnVest, but really he wanted to go up market, but he also wanted to address some major issues. Like, hey, you probably have noticed this, but you can help people all you want with their budgeting, with their overall financial picture. But unless you can really create a process for someone to make financial progress, to get to better financial outcomes, you're not helping someone. I can point out all of your financial issues, but if you are not going to find the time to do it yourself and to actually solve for it, then there's no point for me to have brought it up. In fact, it might even hurt you now because now you're worried that you're underinsured or that if you pass away, you don't have a will or trust set up. And now the whole family's going to blow up because I've put that in your head.
So what led you to working with, I know you work with lots of different individuals, but specifically physicians, and how has that worked out?
Well, we were very fortunate, right? So originally when we rolled out My Financial Coach, it was a few different false starts. We originally thought we were going to go for corporate peoples who have a little bit more of a structure, but they would be right under the C-suite. Turns out if you work for Microsoft, your retirement plan is to hope that Microsoft stock goes to the moon. And that's it. You just hope your ESOP pays off. But really, it was a lucky break. So MDVIP, the country's largest concierge medicine. Yeah, so they were one of our first big clients. And then from there, we just started to see a pattern. A Signature MD signed up, and then we had Apollo, Team Health. We started to work with big organizations, such as the American Association of Physician Leadership, the American College of Emergency Physicians. Like all these orgs, I think they all ended up with the same group of issues, where you have someone who's super highly compensated, and they have a lot of deferred happiness. I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but we're having all these conversations every week. And a few just stand out where not a week goes by where I'm not working with someone who they're in their 50s and they're still paying off their mortgage because they had to start so late.
Yeah, you described exactly what a physician is, all this deferred happiness that leads to the end. So when you're talking with physicians, and we have a number of different doctors who listen to the program, our focus is on entrepreneurship. So we have physicians who are employed, they got a W-2. Mm-hmm. We have a number of physicians who are doing 1099 work, where they're doing telemedicine. And we have a number of physicians who are starting up their own practice. And or some of them are doing have side gigs. So what are the different, maybe two or three different challenges that you're seeing, especially since you have a number of doctors who are now into concierge medicine, they're their own boss?
Sure. Remember, they're their own boss with a lot of asterisks.
That's true.
Instead of one boss, you have potentially, 200, 300 bosses?
Yeah. I know what you're getting at, but yes.
Actually, what's interesting is I recently just did a webinar for AAPL. I think it's on our website, where I addressed this topic. But the way I framed it was physician couples. Because a lot of medical professionals we work with, part of why they got into medicine was to provide for their family and to do a very good job of doing that without having to stress about the money. And I think it is a bit of a lifestyle, because whether it's both couples are in medicine, one is in a high-paying medicine job, one is in a low-paying medicine job, whatever the medical differential is, there's a lot of way that you can make money. There's both of you are W-2s. One of you is W-2. The other one's 1099. Both of you are 1099/K, or you both own the business together. There's a lot of couple dynamics that go mm-hmm. on there. To just pick two things, I would argue, and maybe a few of the people that are aspiring to be entrepreneurs, when you're going from you to 1099, health insurance.
Let's start with that.
Health insurance. It's easy if you and your spouse are both working and you're both W-2. And then one of you decides that you want to start and go down that path, because you're not factoring how expensive health insurance is. And I would say the second thing is, don't do what everyone else does. And here's what I mean by that. Everyone, to a larger or smaller extent, says, hey, maybe you should open up an LLC and then you should do all this stuff. It's supposed to make you lower your taxes. And that's great. Stop. Why do you have an LLC? Are you going to treat it like an LLC? Because if you don't treat your business like an LLC, the IRS isn't going to treat it like an LLC either. And a lot of the medical professionals we work with, they will hear how other people have done it and they will do it just because someone says to do it. Like, we should all buy disability insurance. Do you have good disability insurance? I have disability insurance. It's not about that. It's truly about, do you actually need an LLC or an S-corp? Like, what are you trying to accomplish with that tool? Because anything's a tool. I mean, it's probably a good idea for you to have something, but is it to prevent liability? Is it to engage in some tax strategies? Like, hey, yeah, I want to create an LLC. That way I can hire my children as models and all this stuff. Okay, at least write that down. Like, why are you adding extra layers of complexity if you don't even know why you're doing it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You spent years learning how to save lives, but no one taught you how to secure your own. When you work one-on-one with a CFP professional financial coach, you get a blueprint tailored for the long game of your complex situation. At My Financial Coach, they help physicians choose the best strategy to optimize your annuities and investments, implement tax-saving strategies, and tackle debt like your student loans or mortgage while refining your path to retirement. Save up for that boat, a child's college or wedding, or even a vacation home. Plan ahead for the impacts of the unexpected. Understand how much life insurance you actually need. Project how getting married, raising children, or taking care of an aging parent affects the progress towards your goals. Advice-only financial planning through a fixed monthly subscription, not commissions, to keep planning unbiased and in your best interest. A financial plan isn't just about your money, it's about your future. So go visit myfinancialcoach.com/bootstrapmd to meet with a financial coach and find out if concierge financial planning is right for you.
And I think oftentimes they, like exactly said, because someone else told them to do it and they don't know what to do. So I do encourage you to have some type of entity to protect yourself. Don't do this as a sole proprietorship if you're on there.
So you brought that for liability purposes. But I find a lot of people who do the LLC stuff, the first thing they tell me is, oh, it helps me save on taxes. Okay, yeah. How does it help you save on taxes?
And then they say, oh, my CPA said they got me covered. But that leads to another point. Let's face it, I'm sure we're not the first doctors to say it. Always, I just leave it to my CPA. So what do you say to somebody who's like this? They're not educating themselves on their financial what they have. Yeah.
Sure. So I would say this, right? You don't have to be good at everything. Okay. If you want to do it yourself and it's a hobby, okay, I want to learn how to invest or I want to learn how to do my tax. That's great. But if you don't want to learn this, then you have to be good at a different set of skills. And it's almost like discernment to a certain degree where you have to know enough to be able to vet out an individual. Here's a freebie for all your listeners out there. How do you know if your CPA is a good CPA?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, first of all, you should try to figure out, when I hire a CPA, what am I really hiring? Because if you have to describe the job function, a lot of the times people say, well, it's someone who helps me save on my taxes, and they find all the deductions I wouldn't know about, and they do all this cool stuff. That's not their job. Your CPA only has one job. Only one. And it never will change. Your CPA's one job is to make sure you don't get audited. And if you do get audited, that they're going to have to deal with it. So that's their one job.
Sometimes they don't deal with it.
Well, there you go. That's your problem.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? So if you're hiring a CPA to do all this stuff for you, realistically, they're there to make sure that they're doing their job, which is to make sure you don't get audited. If you don't want to get audited and they don't want you to get audited, guess what you're not going to do?
Yeah, you're not going to hire the guy.
No, you're not going to try to save as much taxes as you can, because the more to save on taxes, the more they're going to try to audit you.
Yeah, that's usually what ends up happening with some of my colleagues. My CPA gives a number, gives me a number. I just follow what the IRS tells me. Oh, I got to do that number.
This is not going to tell you your number. They have a number in mind, but it's your job to try to prove to them that it's a different number. Yeah. So I think ultimately, because a CPA's job is really to make sure you don't get audited, there has to be some sort of checks and balances where having someone to help you figure out, okay, how can I do a self-diagnosis that maybe my CPA is maybe a little overpaid? I'll give you a good example. So if you're just a W-2 person or just straight 1099 and your CPA is filing your taxes and your businesses, but on your personal 1040s, if you look and for the past 2 years, they've taken a standard deduction, and that's very easy to find out. You can just print out your 1040s, go to the line for deduction. Are you itemizing? Are you taking the standard deduction? And if it's standard deduction for the past 2 years, what are they doing? They're not helping you save taxes. You can go on TurboTax. In fact, you may as well. You could file standard deduction on TurboTax just as easily as if you CPA, right? No one's going to audit you for a standard deduction.
And you're giving them all that information, and then you find that they're doing a standard deductions, right? So
yeah,
that'd be very frustrating. But most of us don't look at that. They just sign it and then submit it.
You got it. You got it.
Yeah. Right. So let's talk about some blind spots that you see. Again, many of our physicians are building up their own practices or launching side gigs or side ventures. What are some common financial missteps? You just mentioned it right now. They're looking at seeing if they're doing a standard deduction or not. What are some common missteps that you often see in these type of docs?
I think this one's for all the business owners out there. You need to start with the end in mind. It doesn't matter what company you work for. Start with the end in mind. What are you trying to create here? And there's only one of three things that you're trying to get. All of my clients, I tell them the same thing. Okay, so you're a small business owner. That's great. So what are you trying to do for your exit strategy? And they go, well, I don't know. There's a lot of it. Okay, there's only one of three things. The first thing that you're trying to do is you're trying to scale a business that's super profitable. And you're pouring everything back into the business. You're growing it. And then your strategy is that you're going to sell this business for a huge multiple. And it's going to be in an area that there's a lot of interest in, where there's a roll-up company that comes by and then sucks it up, or perhaps you're able to spin it off or whatever. So that's the first option. The second option is you're building a business that is a legacy. And it could be like, hey, I'm really proud. I like the fact that my name's on the building. I want my kids to take over this business, and it's going to be the best business. Everyone in town's going to love us. They know exactly what our family does, what we're about, who we are. Okay. And then there's the third type of business that is, it's almost like an oil derrick. Okay. It sits on top of a rich deposit of oil or money in this case, and you're just sucking it up. You're sucking up all this money, and it's just all this oil. And then you're taking all that money and you're building something outside of it with it. So it could be, okay, I'm buying a bunch of rental properties. I'm taking all this money and stuffing it into a 401k, cash balance, etc. And a lot of people say, I'm doing all three. No. If you're trying to do all three, you're doing the third thing by default. Anytime you're not doing the first two, you're doing the third one. And that's not a bad strategy. But if that is your strategy, then you need to be very specific with how you're structuring your business, because you're probably losing a lot of money to inefficiencies, whether that be taxes on your personal or business side, or potentially you're leaving a lot of money on the table, especially if you're in a type of medicine that is being actively targeted by roll-ups. Because now you're being penny wise and pound foolish. Because if you really were to pour just a little bit extra money in there and become a better roll-up target, that's a way better end cash out goal for you.
Yeah, and it's surprising. I talk to doctors all the time. They don't even think about the first one. Maybe they think about two, but these days most of their kids aren't going into medicine anyways. But...
Well, they tell their kids not to, right?
Yeah, we're actually telling them not to. But yeah, that's really good. Could maybe share a story or a case study of a practice owner who was struggling and really got them set up in a viable financial strategy.
Sure. So there was a couple that we work with, very sweet couple, very smart individuals. They opened up a dentistry practice. They talk about printing money, right? I had the same conversation with them, all sorts of stuff, but something very simple. So every doc says, okay, I should buy disability insurance. But here's the thing, if you're a business owner, you have a lot more options, because guess what? Instead of just buying individual disability, which is expensive, think about your 401k mutual fund fees versus inside of a brokerage account that you just buy off the shelf. You don't have to pay commissions and fees super high for those products. Same thing goes for group. So instead of buying individual disability, and that's their basic layer, because they own their own dentist practice, they could actually buy group disability. And it was cheaper to their whole practice than just themselves. And their business got a write-off for it. But if they decided that they wanted to upfront the taxes for it, then the benefit would still come to them tax-free. So these are the things that once you're a business owner, there's a bunch more stuff that you can do that the common person just cannot do. They're stuck buying the individual stuff. Like when you're in a W-2, it's whatever your employer decides that they're willing to pay for. Some of them do a good job, some of them don't, but you don't get a choice. When you own your own business and you're an entrepreneur, you get all the choices. Now, you could make some bad choices, so you got to make some good choices. But if you can make some really good choices, the differentials between how fast you can build wealth versus your colleagues, immense. I have a power couple. Both of them, I think, are in pediatrics. One is in surgery. The other, actually, I think they're both in pediatric surgery. So smart couple. And we're talking about all this stuff. And I had the husband go, wow, I'm looking at all this stuff. It really looks like I don't need any more W-2 income. I really need more 1099 income.
I'm not saying it. I guess. Yeah.
Once you stop thinking about income as the biggest driver of you comparing with your friend, oh, I made this much, you made this much, instead of talking about, hey, this is how much I got to keep using some of my very slick strategies, I think that's a lot more valuable. I don't know if the medical community is ready to move away from, I make this much. It wasn't until we started working with docs that we realized that there's like a hierarchy. Okay, if you're in family medicine, you're a loss leader, you don't make that much. If you're in surgery or ER, you make more. You can move away from that conversation because it's really about how much you keep. And there are some people that manage to keep a lot of money to themselves.
I think I was listening on one podcast. You gave an example, maybe you could share it here. Someone was making $400,000, but when they actually looked into it, they were making a lot less. You want to share that?
Sure. So let's say you live in California, right? Love the very nice weather. Let's say you're not married, you're single, you're making $400,000. Well, the federal government comes along and they're taking 37% of the very tippy top, which is a good chunk of your income. But then the 32% starts, and then below that, you got the 20s. So between that, and then you got to add in Social Security, you got to add in Medicare, you got to add in your state's generous deductions. And then, of course, you have any sort of health insurance that you're paying for. I would say that there is a silly goose tax where a lot of our clients, they get their W-2 and they look at their benefits package and they say, I'll just take it all. It's like, well, do you need it all? Do you need that commuter benefit? I don't know. Maybe not. Are you actually getting that much value? And if not, then stop electing it. But let's say you elect everything. Well, I mean, basically, you're making only $200,000 that you're putting into your bank account. If that's what you're doing with it.
Right. It's really sobering on there. So this has been a pretty crazy year in terms of finances.
Sure.
Today, just as included, there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, doubt that's going on. What is like one financial move that most doctors can make this year to improve their long-term outlook? Is there one thing that you're seeing? What could they do?
I think that the one thing that anyone should do is try to control what they can control. We don't know whether or not they're going to pass that 40,000 salt cap limit. We don't know if there's going to be a trade war. We don't know that. I mean, quite frankly, we just don't. But what we do know is that currently, unless the budget is not passed the way it is, you're going to pay anywhere from 37 to 39% of your income, the tippy top at 37%. We know that. If your state has state taxes, you're going to pay that. We know that. If you could just address those things, that's a 40% return on your money every year, over 40% return. If you can try to mitigate that tippy top of your taxes, you're getting a 40% return every year, at least.
You got to make it a priority. The thing is, doctors, we focus on what we're bringing in and then we just ignore it. We just get my check and direct deposit in, and then we don't realize there are some things that we can do. That ends now with talk about my financial coach. What do you guys do? How do you work? How can someone get started?
Well, it's pretty easy. We're a subscription-based financial planning company. We're not trying to sell you any life insurance or whatever. We give you your own CFP who's a salaried individual. They have no ability to offer anything other than their unbiased and unconflicted view on your finances. We use financial planning software where we're able to look through all of your accounts. We're able to understand, hey, where have you developed some financial fragility? You're going to have to forgive me, but we see ourselves as your primary care for your finances.
Yeah, I love that. You want to talk about that?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So the way that we see it is, we're going to run your financial blood work, your financial EKGs, and we're ultimately going to see if you're financially healthy. But just like in any primary care situation, you're healthy until you're not. And there are things that you can spot early, like some financial plaque, let's call it, or some financial high cholesterol, that if we can address it early, you'll be really good 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. But if you're having a really unhealthy financial lifestyle, I think we all know who we are in the audience, and you're constantly ignoring the warning sign, the biggest one being the IRS letter saying, hey, you should pay us. But ultimately, if you keep ignoring your financial warning signs, you will not get the financial freedom that was promised to you when you decided to defer so much happiness when you first started on this path. That's very clear to me. We have plenty of people that we know, probably through stories, that they're forced to work. It doesn't matter. They're doctors for life. And so there are a few things that we notice that we can help correct for. But ultimately, like any primary care, we know our limits. We're not going to go into the operating room and try to tell the surgeon how to operate as a primary care person. So as a primary care physician, I'm sure that the listeners out there might agree with that. But for your primary care financials, we're going to understand where our limits are, but we're going to know enough when we need to consult, let's say with an estate planning attorney, or we're going to consult with a tax professional. And that's where my financial coach picked up, where the last company I was at, LearnVest, didn't get all the way there. I think they solved a lot of issues, but they weren't all the way there, because ultimately, who's going to go out there and be a better person to vet out a financial person other than a financial person? So we go out there across the country. We talk to realtors. We talk to mortgage officials. We talk to all sorts of financial people. So that way, when you're having to make that one big decision, like, hey, do I trust this investment advisor or this insurance agent? That one shot that you have, that's not the same for us. We currently work with about 400 highly comp medical families. We represent 400 people. So we take that responsibility and we go out there and we negotiate on behalf of all our clients. And we try to understand that the cream rises to the top. And we take these individuals and we're constantly evaluating them against everyone that is available. And we call them our subject matter experts. And ultimately, if we find better ones out there in the wild, we're always recruiting. We have no sacred bulls here. We're not even paid on that. So that's where having your own CFP, who is a salaried individual, is going to be very powerful and always going to be on your side to help evaluate anything that you do and ultimately bring whatever is most important to your attention instead of what's important to them.
Yeah, that's really good. I mentioned earlier with my client who, it's like almost anybody can call themselves a financial advisor.
Sure.
And I said, do they have a CFP? What's that? I don't know what that is. But all they know is that they're getting their 1%, which can be very frustrating. And then they said, I can't leave them, or I should leave them. And so what do you have, this follow up just to end, like if someone has a financial advisor and they're interested, how does that work?
Well, here's the good news is we're not here to try to manage for our 1%. That way you got to pay us our 1% and their 1%. And then, you know, let's bring someone else in for 3%. No, that's not what we do. We're being paid our subscription fee. It's as of the recording of today, which is, was it June 9th, 2025? All right, so it's $2,000 for onboarding, $150 a month. So it's just about as expensive as a concierge medicine doctor. So we're going to go in and we're going to review all of this. And what would you like to know? Hey, your investment advisor is in the top 1% of the country. You chose a good one.
That's great.
How powerful would that be? Knowing.
Yeah, very powerful, yeah.
But how also equally powerful would it be if I come in and I go, hey, I've interviewed like 500 investment advisors by now. The guy doesn't even make it to the top. I don't know. They stop counting people after that.
And so you're not biased. And that's the thing is, it's like, that's what it's all about. And I love that you're continually education, and education is important. And things change, right? Relationship change, different vehicles change.
Sure.
Tax laws change. All of that.
Well, I think business models change, right? So back then, the stockbroker was the bad guy. They were the guy that was trying to Wolf of Wall Street everyone. It's like, well, I'm the mutual fund guy. I'm the good guy. You pay me 20% commission. I give you a special person to trade your stocks. And then that guy became the bad person when Vanguard came out with their robo. Things change. And you certainly want someone to keep on top of that.
Right. Anpo Tu, a CEO of My Financial Coach. Thank you for sharing your wisdom today. It's been very illuminating. What video games are you playing right now?
I just beat Expedition 33.
I don't know that. What
is that? It's like Final Fantasy, but French.
Okay. Wow. That is very nerdy, and that's really French nerdy there.
Yeah, but it's really popular right now. I'm also playing Dragon Quest right now, and also Warhammer 2 Space Marines. My fiance and I, we're getting married in November. We actually just picked up It Takes Two. It's a very fun game.
That's what we're doing, and we're playing that right now, actually. It's an older game, but it's, if you don't know, we're nerd out. Sorry, guys. It allows for co-op players, so they're playing, and then they have to... They're dolls, and then you have to, like...
It's like couples counseling, but cheaper. And it's also fun, because it's video games.
Yeah, but I'm yelling at my wife, you need to suck the eyeballs out of the vacuum. I don't know how this is helping our marriage, but it does. And Botu, thank you for sharing your time with us today. Very lighting. Go ahead, check out their website, Mind Financial Coach. Full transparency, they are a sponsor for the program, Bootstrap MD. And again, I look forward to our next conversation.
Take care, Dr. Mike.
Take care. And thank you guys for listening. You're going to have your ups and downs in your business, just as any entrepreneur would. Do something little each day to get you closer to your goals and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now let's get to work.